welcome to the Mad Trio Podcast. This week we have the California Pariah, Jonathan Charney. We have James, the Fat Man Stevens, and Ryan, the Black Love Preston. And so I kind of went down the Reddit hole a bit.
And did you like that we did that in unison, Ryan? It wasn't even practiced.
Hopefully you guys did jazz hands while you said it, though.
Yeah. So I found something that's actually pretty cool. It's called the Dexcom G6 Real-Time Glucose Monitoring Device.
That's a catchy fucking name.
It is, but it's actually kind of cool and kind of freaky. It reminds me of a Bluetooth headset. Here, take a look. Looks like a Bluetooth headset. And what it does, punctures the.
Gotcha.
You have a device with a needle in it. It shoots a needle into you. You put this device on top of the platform it puts onto your skin, and then you have real time live blood sugar monitoring. Besides the fact you have like a needle stuck in you, it's pretty cool. I actually first learned about this. There's a YouTube channel, I think she calls herself Diabetic Danica, and she was talking about it, and I was super curious about the technology.
Okay, like, what do you care?
Yeah, I mean, that definitely seems interesting. I'll tell you what, I think it's
pretty cool, actually.
I mean, the
I was shocked to find out how many fucking people have diabetes, man. Like that is some crazy shit. We're all gonna die of one of three things, okay?
Cancer,
diabetes. Hypertension, heart disease, and diabetes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, pick one of those three, and that'll be on your fucking death certificate. Mark my words.
You know what is the 100% cause of death? Being born.
True. But the negative side about
that was incredibly philosophical.
The negative side about this device, it seems like it has a it looks like a temperature, like a thermometer reader. That looks like a temperature reader. Thing, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So what you do, basically, it has a needle in it, and you put the platform on it. You put it to your stomach, hit a button, and it, like, injects the base into your skin, and you plug that little sensor into it, and it looks like it attaches to your smartphone or cell phone, and then you can, like, real-time measure what your blood sugar is.
It'd be cool if you can get, like, app alerts, you know what I mean? Like hey, stay away from sugar right now. Or, hey, eat a Snickers. Or right. I don't know how fucking diabetes works. I'm just guessing.
Well, no, it's past a certain number, if I remember correctly, because I just did a diabetes runs in my family, so I do a test every year. It's like 90, I think, or lower, and the glucose test, and you're fine. It's like 90 and higher, you possibly have diabetes, so they can do other tests. And there's diabetes 1 and 2. One is completely insulin dependent, and one you can actually... you can control to some degree with diet change, like no sugars, be very careful on carbohydrates, stuff like that, which would cut out 90% of my favorite foods.
Yeah, pretty much.
And the other cool thing, and I don't know what they're called, but they have this device that does something similar, but it has insulin in your, it has insulin. So you connect,
automatically releases insulin in your body.
Yeah, that's it. It's an insulin pump. And there's two types of those that I saw. There's one that's like a pod, literally, it just, the whole pod sticks to your body. There's no wires, no cables. And there's another one that reminds me of an old, like an iPod, actually, that size, and has a cable to it. And so you'd have the injection site, you know, like on your body, and then like the iPod insulin pump, like in a pocket. So the technology is super interesting. So I kind of went on a massive Reddit hole of reading about the device, because the technology is pretty freaking amazing.
Well, the diabetes community appreciates your support.
Yeah, and diabetes awareness.
And I personally prefer to mandate that we call it the Beatus from now on.
The Beatus?
Diabetes.
Yeah.
Thank you, Walter.
In honor of Wilford Brimley.
Okay. I don't know if I remember that, but the technology is super interesting. On an update on Roseanne Arnold, you can pick what her last name is. Apparently, she was supposed to be on the Joe Rogan show, and she bowed out. She apparently said that she had, she was really sick. She got, I just read the...
Diabetes?
No, she got a cold, and apparently the last year or the last so many months of making the show really took a toll on her. Besides the fact that Roseanne Barr is actually kind of crazy. So I can, so that's the latest on her, but I can totally see having exhaustion, drinking or taking drugs.
Well, okay. Here's what I heard, because there was a couple of people that she had talked to, actually Rogan being one of them, who had kind of came out and publicly said that, she had called, we had talked. She said that, I guess what it was she didn't, this is Roseanne talking, she didn't realize that the woman she was talking about was black.
Well, that was that part too.
What?
Well, honestly, yeah, and she doesn't, she's not,
but...
Well, no, that her reason...
Yeah, no, look, okay. She's obviously very, very light-skinned, but, it was somebody who paid attention to politics, especially like she did. I almost find it hard to believe she wasn't aware of her and wasn't aware that she was black just through osmosis. Let's say for the sake of argument that's an honest statement. You know what I mean? Like, does it really change... the decision, you know what I mean? Like, okay, are we seeing just like a tip of the iceberg of crazy over here? I was listening to something earlier, actually. It was an interview, and I don't remember the other guy's name. I want to say he's somewhere up in like Michigan area, but he was talking to the Nuge, good old Ted Nugent, who's a very, very loudmouth conservative. Me and the Nuge disagree on a lot of shit, but he gets a pass for me because he wrote Stranglehold.
But you're giving him his cute nickname?
The Nuge?
Yeah. I mean, how can you disagree with a guy on a lot of stuff, but he's got a cute nickname.
How can you not like Uncle Ted?
That's the thing. He's my crazy Uncle Ted. You know what I mean? Oh, that's crazy Uncle Ted. Leave crazy Uncle Ted alone, and he won't shoot you.
So I was giving this a thought.
He was talking to this guy earlier, and he was bringing up this point where, like what's wrong with we can't use ape or monkey or chimp or gorilla to call people anymore. As if unaware that it's used to like demean black people, which I thought was fucking hilarious, because he's like, look, we run a school and thing where we teach these kids and all kinds of life skills and things like that, and there's kids from Asians and white and black and Mexican and South, whatever, with all these kids, and he's like, and our favorite thing is we say, hey, come on in, you crazy little monkeys. He's like, then that's not racist. Like, of course it's not. You know what I mean? But when you have like international soccer games and the opposing team is throwing bananas on the fucking field because the other team is black, you know what I mean? Like there's a thing there that happens where, yes, that might be used to reference a bunch of rambunctious children. And also to reference, the fucking inhumanity of the black people. You know what I'm saying? So there's this disingenuous fucking argument that keeps coming out about like, well, we can't say monkeys anymore. It's like not in certain circumstances, fuckface.
Yeah, no, it's...
I mean,
it's,
you're not going to bring back porch monkey?
I had to go there. Ladies and gentlemen, we here at what are we now? The Mad Trio Show.
Really like Kevin Smith.
We disavow all knowledge and all context to whatever just saying.
I agree with James's point. Like no, we're not bringing it back.
I would say, far as the Valerie Jarrett thing, I could see if you were high as a kite or drunk off your ass, somewhat crazy and on some sort of medication like Roseanne is, I could see not making the connection, but I mean, she's African American. I mean, she's light skinned, but I'm not making an excuse for her, but I can see how that happens, especially Roseanne Barr's never been stable. If you've actually followed her career, that's what makes her a genius to some degree in comedy. Robin Williams was insane, but he was a lovable insane.
But he never really went racist, full on racist.
How do you know? He just never did it in public.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Well, that, and that's the thing is that this is apparently not the first.
He never did it. He never tweeted anything. He never
Facebook, MySpace, whatever the fuck you wanted to do. He never did anything like that.
Well, that wasn't as common when he was alive.
Wasn't in as common? But, bullshit! 1970s, 1960s.
Yeah. No,
that
I meant
was
like,
all over the place. No, he was doing stand-up and all that stuff.
No, I meant recording. Recording the stuff wasn't as common when he was alive like it is now.
All right. But even it would come
out. Yeah, but also we're not talking about a recording of a private conversation or something like that.
Like
we're talking
about
this person publicly tweeting.
Yeah.
You know
what I'm saying?
So it's a version of like people like especially comedians use it as a platform. Hey, I'm going to get this joke out there. I'm going to do these things. And apparently what she had said is to Rogan in full on quote was like, "Look, I didn't know she was Jewish. Do you think I'm fucking stupid?" And that kind of struck just an honest chord, like, okay, yeah, that would be a little bit off the fucking reservation, possibly even for Roseanne. But then people keep actually bringing up, and by people, I mean there's a few new news organizations that I've seen reference some older tweet that she had done, possibly from like 2015, 2013, where she had done a very similar thing to another black person referencing apes or something of the like.
Which, by the way, is the one negative side about the internet, is they're going to drag up shit you said 30 years ago, but you were dumb enough to tweet
but
it.
If she's claiming like, hey, wait a second, you know, I this isn't me, I'm not like this, and then they're able to kind of like, but what about this one?
But we've both known both known people who are, and I'm this is a hypothetical because I don't know Roseanne from a hole in the wall, but we both know people who are alcoholics or drug addicts who are taking medication where that is possible. That's, you know, that's the only thing I could think of that would possibly be the case. That's what she says. And the people who seem to know her say, yeah, she's this, you know, she's as bad as a belfry. She's on all this medication. So maybe that's the case. I mean, I would like to think so. I don't like to think the bad of anybody. I hate to see anybody being racist, but she could be. I mean, all because you're Jewish is not an automatic pass.
But, I mean, I'm just going to put this out there.
Right.
I mean, Carol O'Connor, prime example of this. The things he said in All in the Family... Very racist.
Yeah, you know
stuff.
What? I was talking about this earlier. Didn't
That's true.
It? I never watched a whole lot of All in the Family,
oh,
but
great
didn't,
show, Meathead.
Didn't that show? I know, but didn't the show follow the same sort of sitcom rules as anything else, where there was always the sort of morality tale? Hey, morality lesson learned at the end of these particular episodes. Hey,
yes
you know
and
what?
No.
This
I
guy
mean, there,
might be this way, but we
was,
all learn to live together.
A mute button for him.
I know there was an episode where Carol O'Connor was up with Sammy Davis Jr. And also the Jefferson's guy, too, as well. And they were on the show while he was doing his racist bit and stuff. And there was a couple turnarounds in, you know, his like, oh, well, that guy's not that word type thing. But for the most part, he had free license to say whatever the hell the writers thought up.
I thought it was more of the fact what it was doing. I think it was more of a morality tale in the sense of.
This is what your life would be like?
Yeah, kind of. But it was also, I think, showing the fact that it sometimes he was proving wrong, that his views were wrong. There's an episode where there was this African-American gentleman with a little tiny, like, penknife eating an apple. And through the whole story, he's talking about, there's this insert comment here with this giant knife, and the story evolves, and eventually he's proven wrong. And so I think that's what more of it was. But I think it was an honest conversation. Say, yeah, there's people like him.
Yeah.
And all his family, his wife, his daughter, his son-in-law were all saying, dude, what the hell?
Yeah. Yeah. But
yeah, and then also the Jeffersons were also there, you know, always calling him a honky and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it was kind of the both sides of the coin. Yeah, I mean, but the point was, the show was almost improving. It was almost improving race relations based on its sort of brave look at the content.
Yeah, and I mean, even there was still that with the Roseanne show from the 90s. There was also where Roseanne would be stupid and stuff like that, and it'd come back, turn around, and be, you know, show
so,
how stupid she is. And
so George Jefferson was played by a guy by the name of Sherman Helmsley, who's no longer with us.
Yeah.
He used to say honky all the time. Up until the point during the series, and this is via him, via an interview that I saw years ago, he would flub the line on purpose. Because he thought, from my recollection, it's like, okay, we need to move on from this. Because I think he saw the fact that, okay, this is racism.
Yeah.
And I also think it's coming from the fact, and this is my conjecture, the fact that I think, and I don't know, this is my guess, that he thought, let's rise above it. Yeah, there's somebody calling me this, but I'm better than that. You know, I don't know if it's fair, but...
Sherman Hemsley.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, Sherman Hemsley. I had it backwards, dyslexia. Anyways, but yeah, he was actually a really great person from what I've seen and heard about him as a actual individual, not what he played on television. And same with Carol O'Connor. Carol O'Connor, from what I've heard some people saying, was a very sweet guy at times.
Now, here's a question, and I think I know the answer.
At times.
How?
When he's drunk.
How would you do All in the Family today?
You won't. You cannot do that.
Could you do it in a way?
Well, see, okay, look, that's the thing, is that people talk sometimes. I've heard people bring up All in the Family in a conversation as if to say like they've forgotten what it was about and how it, what it sort of meant to the zeitgeist at the time. Obviously, it was a little before my time, but just how it's been always presented to me. And they look back on it as like, oh, remember when we used to be able to say the N-word? You know what I mean? Like, with that sort of fun. It's like, oh, remember when we could make those jokes? It's like, no, those jokes were there to make a point, you know, about the you know, commenting on the social commentary of the day. You know what I mean? So you could do that show today if it had the same sort of moral goals.
But would you,
you know,
see
if it's
it
like,
being
hey, we're going to take an honest look and just, you know, with the flavor of the day, it'd be fine.
But would you be able to do it with white people? I mean, you could guarantee they'd do it with an African-American family, but could you do it with a white people?
They actually do that with black people.
Well, you're not going to do it on fucking ABC, that's for damn sure.
Well, yeah, no, I know, but I'm just wondering, because the reason I like those shows is the fact I love the open dialogue. It's the reason why I've sat down with African-American people, gentlemen and ladies, and talked about what was the racism you've experienced. I've asked questions because it's not something that happens to me. And if it has, I'm just not paying attention because I'm honestly swamped in my real life. I'm just too damn busy.
You Jew.
Hey, I am what I am. So I'd like to see like these type of shows go on, because I think sitcoms like this are the perfect way to have an honest conversation.
Well,
I just
don't
think
way.
It could.
So I kind of agree with John.
Look,
hold on. What I would say is we could possibly do that type of show now. I think that's actually maybe something that the Roseanne show that was coming out recently would have probably touched on at some point. But I don't think that they could do it as honestly as they did at the time. Because in the 1960s and 70s, when the show was coming out, there was still a lot of racism that was affluent all across the nation. There were still white and black bathroom sinks, things like that. But hold on. But what they did was they took some extremes, i.e. Carol O'Connor and the Jeffersons, and took it to that point where they were more in your face than they would be able to get away with now. I don't see a television show where a bunch of a majority white cast can come up and say the things that Carol O'Connor got away with saying from his script.
So
I'm not saying he actually said it from his mouth, but from what was in the writers. Same with the Jeffersons. I think that there would have to be a different way that they would approach it if it was even a black group. Now, I haven't watched, what's that show, Dear White People, or a couple other ones that have come out, because I don't want to see something that is that racist in my face anymore, because they don't do it in a comedic manner.
So I have... Hold on.
He's coming against my rebuttal.
No, I did want to say something that... I have talked to people who are African-American who have said that, like, All in the Family was kind of played down to their experiences. Granted, there is a caveat to the fact that this is one or two individuals versus a group of a whole. It's not an average. But I have been told that, you know, stuff like that is kind of played down to what they experience. That's all I wanted to say.
Now,
but here's the point that I was going to make, though, is you've already seen a shift in the zeitgeist from, you know, 15, 20 years ago. Okay. The example that I thought of was back in the day, what was funny was like, remember like all 90s black comics, it was always like white people are like this, black people are like this.
Yeah.
You know, because that was before everybody knew everything about everybody. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was before Twitter. It was before social media. It was before this sort of global interaction with each other. So it was still kind of a mystery. Like, hey, I didn't know white people were like us. Oh, I didn't know black people were like us. You know, so those jokes were funny. But then 10 years later, if you heard somebody do those types of jokes, even just the premise, like, white people be doing this, you're just like, really? We know what white people do, guy.
Are you talking? You
know, you'd get that kind of reaction.
I was thinking of the I think it was the Dave Chappelle one where he's bringing up his white friend. I didn't know I couldn't do that. You know, that joke. That kind of what you're going with, you know?
But it's something where now we've kind of moved beyond that. We sort of know enough about each other, you know, that it's not like the comedy isn't from that. Oh, I just don't know enough about these people. So to do these kinds of racist thing, it's like, oh, this person knows better.
You know, I was going to bring up two movies for me that I think we actually did them both in RFR. I know we definitely did one. Anyways, that were made in the 70s that I think were like the pinnacle of what our society should strive for and in race relations. And I would throw out Blazing Saddles and Hear No Evil, See No Evil, both with Gene Wilder. But I think the fact that those movies came out and they were both anti-racism in the fact that they were against that. It was the whole thing of the black sheriff, you know, that, and with Gene Wilder's respect for, Brian, what's the guy's name? The black guy. I can't think of his name right now.
In No Evil, See No Evil?
Cleavon Little. Oh, Cleavon Little. Richard Pryor. Come on. Anyways, but, you know, that came out at a time where they could still make the extreme jokes. And I see a meme with Gene Wilder and Cleavon Little and Blazing Saddles. And it says, remember the good old days when we could offend everyone? And that's what I enjoy about those types of comedies, All in the Family, the early Mel Brooks stuff, is they made fun of everybody. It wasn't just one race, it was all of them. And it was showing the just the stereotypes. Like, even when they were sitting there and they were grabbing the railroad workers and they said, except the Irish, you know? I mean, that was a great joke.
Yeah, oh, dude, that's
still
one of my favorite jokes of all time. But we don't want the Irish.
Yeah.
Well, if you take a look at the Don Rickles roasts, the 70s, they're interesting for one because they're definitely a product of their time. But some of the jokes he says to the African American panelists, he could never make today.
Oh, yeah.
No, he makes jokes about them stealing silverware, being
and I'm laughing because it's funny, not because it's just racist.
Being like maids and stuff like that, and I don't know how you do it. I do think, and my
I don't think it can be done.
My personal opinion has always been, and I've gotten a lot of crap from a lot of people over the years, is you should be able to make fun of people's differences, because the fact that. Everybody that I'm friends with on some level, I say horrendous stuff. I've known James for 20 years. I've said stuff to him that I would never say to anybody else. Just because I've known him for so long. I think that's how you build friendships and good relationships, is by that. You know, like cracking on people, making jokes. You make each other comfortable by cracking on differences and things that make you uncomfortable. I mean, what do you think, Ryan?
No, I mean, absolutely. And you know, that's why there's certain things like in a public forum, I wouldn't joke about that. I would probably totally joke about with you guys. I mean, as far as somebody who knows my sensibility, like you guys know me, you've known me for a long time now. You know what I'm about. You know what I stand for. You know what my beliefs are. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's you know that if I say something really fucked up, that I'm doing it because I'm not that fucked up. You know what I mean? Like I it's the juxtaposition of like I'm making the joke that would never be made.
Yeah.
If I make a racist joke, it's coming from a just a good hearted place.
I came up with
and not because I actually believe in it.
Yeah. Well, I mean I came up with a really great Holocaust joke. I'm Jewish. I have family that survived it. I won't make it on here because it could be taken really horribly to people.
Thank you.
And you guys all think that I'm already anti-Nazi, which I am, but that doesn't make me anti-German. But So, you know, that whole thing is that I will make the joke to you guys. I'm not going to sit there and post it on my Facebook feed because there's a shit ton of people that are going to take it inappropriately, not the way I actually mean it.
No, I see the way I take that.
Hey, James.
Yeah.
Hey, James.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Why didn't Hitler drink?
Why?
Because he was a real bastard when he drank.
See, that wasn't that bad. Come on, John, you can take your hand out of your face.
I'm really glad because for the audio listeners, I was
he's like
no,
sitting there like covering his face, like you don't know who I am
because I'm the one doing all the social media. Do you have any idea how much crap I have to deal with?
Oh yeah, do you actually want to tell my
that's my favorite
joke?
Fucking no. Hitler joke. That is hilarious.
See, I don't know. We need to switch topics because I don't know if there's going to be any way to solve it.
I have a question for Ryan since he works in the industry. So, how much do you know about body decomposition, Ryan? Like, how quickly it takes?
More than most, less than scholars.
Okay, so there was a lady, parts of her soul around. A religious Catholic nun who lived in France from 1806 until 1876. And her body was exhumed after 57 years after her death. And there's very little decomposition. I'm showing John the picture of her because they have her in a glass case.
So what is this article from?
That's just some weird, unexplained shit.
Oh, it's a Facebook article type one.
Yeah, basically.
There's a lot of weird little things that can... How long ago?
She died in 1876, 57 years after her death. She was exhumed, so that was, 1940s?
57 years, yeah. It depends on what they mean by very little decomposition. That means comparably.
Like, you still see her facial features with her skin attached, not decomposed.
But she doesn't look like a mummy. When your body decomposes, most of the time it's essentially like bacteria and mold and things like that that end up actually, decomposing you. You know, there's a bit of the sort of inside out. You know, your gases are going to expand. You know, things like that. It's mostly human pathogens. Those types of bacteria and then mold and things like that. So it really depends on where you're buried, the conditions, moisture, lack of moisture.
What the
preparation was, what kind of embalming was done, how clean she was when she went into the casket, when it was sealed, when it was buried. You know, there's a lot of mitigating factors that can lead to some weird sort of non-skeletal remains even after something like 50 years.
Okay. Well, what this article made me think of is there's a practice in Buddhism called, I'm going to fucking mispronounce the shit out of this thing, Soko Shinbutsu, which what they do is it's supposed to be like they...
is this the self-mummification?
Yeah. Where
this
they actually,
is gnarly. I've seen
where
it.
Where they actually go into a cave and it's supposed to be like a sign of entering into another state of awakening or some shit like that. If your body doesn't decompose properly in this cave, so they go into this cave and they go in alive, enter a meditative state and just let themselves die in there. And then
is this the one that has that crazy diet like for the year?
I probably
on one of these you're supposed to eat all this stuff beforehand.
But so what they do is they go in the cave, they get enclosed in the cave, and then certain years later some other monks come up and check on your body, and if your body has a slight decomposition, then they say that you've entered into this new state of being. If your body is under normal decomposition, then they just consider that you didn't and they remove you from the cave. Now I'm wondering, because to me what that goes into is what you were saying as far as environmental decomposition. If there's something in that cave, certain time of year, blah, 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 that helps your body be preserved and enter into mummification. Now, I'm kind of thinking, is that the same thing as where this Catholic nun was buried? Because that's the only thing that makes sense to me.
I mean,
what do you think on that?
Yeah, possibly. I'm definitely sure there's been some scholarly weighing in on this particular one.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's at least some kind of a working hypothesis or some precedent
I didn't
that they can point back to. Oh, in this particular case, something like that happened like this. Or yeah, I'd be interested in looking into that though. That's curious.
Yeah, so that's something that the nun thing made me think of, because, I mean, as far as, like, I'd be going is the same way as you, is not being like, oh, this nun is some type of saint, reach some sainthood shit or something, you know, and be like,
yeah,
oh,
I mean,
if you touch her, you're not going to die, you know?
Was she buried at the top of an icy mountain or something?
But they didn't go into the article. Just, you know, that's what I'm thinking. Did she die in the Antarctic? You know,
so yeah, I mean, you know, because obviously in the beginning, temperature plays a big, big factor.
Yeah, because CSI's gone into it as well with Grisham and the bugs and things like that. They go into some of that stuff. And I guess John wants to stop talking about dead people.
Well, I just found a hilarious story. Dennis Rodman reportedly will attend Donald Trump's summit with Kim Jong-un, which is hilarious, like one of the greatest rebounders in the history of the NBA, along with being one of the greatest drug addicts.
And
former man
and
who married himself is going to try to be a peacemaker.
I forgot about that. He wore a dress for it, too.
So this is from the Bleacher Report. I think this is hilarious. However, I think he's the only person who's actually been repeatedly to North Korea and has came back.
Only American, by the way.
True. Yeah, that's what I meant. Excuse
so
me.
How old is Kim Jong-un guy, whatever?
I don't think they actually know his real age.
He's like, what, 35 or something?
Yeah, I was going to say, he's got to be around our age. So, I mean, he probably does have fond memories of Dennis Rodman in the 90s. I mean, do you think he watches, what was it, Double Team, the one that Rodman did with Jean-Claude Van Damme or whatever. I mean, does he have that on loop in his room? You know, I mean,
doubt he's seen that movie a couple times.
Oh, no. What he's watching is old reruns of WCW when he went along with the NWO.
Oh, jeez, I forgot about that too.
I just think it's odd. I mean, I think it's more power to Rodman, but I think it's a little weird that somehow they think, or he thinks, that he's gonna save the world one drink at a time.
I don't think Dennis Rodman is doing that. I just want to know how good is Rodman's Korean at this point.
Rodman has been a frequent visitor to North Korea in recent years, forging a relationship with Kim during that time. On the other hand, he could actually make a giant difference, being the only person who's probably in the Western world had any long talks.
Oh, yeah.
Talks.
I mean, that's
Granted, you have to trust what Kim is saying, but
you know, I was watching this short documentary yesterday, actually, and they were talking about Churchill's relationship with Stalin. And what I'm bringing this up because they really formed a bond when it was like, I think it was the second talk that Churchill had with Stalin. And Stalin at some point just kind of goes, hey, would you want to come over to my house for dinner? And so they go over to Stalin's house and they start. They ended up having a three-hour dinner with numerous bottles of wine and other alcohol, and they formed a real bond together with that. And that's what I'm thinking. Maybe Rodman is our Churchill? I mean, that's kind of a stretch.
Well, as long as he's not Neville Chamberlain, I'll be on.
Yeah, no shit. But as long as, you know, I mean, he's forming some type of bond, I just don't know if
I think that's a
well,
little bit,
I think it's
going to
be literally just the using him for the introduction.
Yeah.
Hey, Kim, this is my boy Donald.
Yeah.
If anything, he's the canary.
All right. Thanks, Dennis. Go ahead and take a walk, buddy.
If anything, he's the canary in the coal mine. Because I just don't see. I mean, I think Ryan's right. I think it's going to be. He's definitely, I think, talked to the State Department on some level, like had conversations about.
Whoa.
I mean, I think that's what it is.
Is it really that strange, though? I mean, or is it just like, hey, maybe this will kind of get this guy on some kind of a comfortable level?
That's what I'm kind of thinking.
I think it's strange because of Dennis Rodman's history. I think that's it. I mean, he's been an individual that has had issues. And I think that's the only reason.
Oh
why
no, that's not going to be coming up.
You know, as Rodman goes, I think he took his bad boy persona and ran with it and made lots of money. I do not blame him for making money off of that, but I honestly think the way that he disappeared in the media and in the scandal sites after it was shortly after his marriage to himself. I think that was his smart move. Because
that dude is crazy like a fox, man.
But I mean, it was a smart move on his part because he disappeared, made his money, disappeared. But he does have his crazy side. But I mean, OJ.
But I think a lot of that. I think a lot of that was calculated. You know what I mean? I think a lot of it was, hey, I can get away with this, and I probably should because it's good for my sort of global image. And then he kicked back. He's still a pretty eccentric dude.
I mean,
but he comes out when he wants to, and yeah.
Well, I mean, he had a book describing his himself called "Bad as I Want to Be." His ex wife, came out with a book that said "Not as bad as you think he is."
Yeah,
but I do think. I mean, it could be a benefit. I mean, I do think the media thinks it's weird because of his past,
his history. Yeah,
this could be a good thing though, because the fact that Kim could easily see, okay, this dude may be off his rocker. Maybe I can take advantage of him. Maybe it's the best thing because both sides really don't know what he's going to do. And maybe it could. Maybe this is the best thing. Having somebody who's damaged say, hey, man, all we want to do is peace. It could totally
The good thing is that Dennis Rodman is not going to be asked to weigh in on the nuclear development of North Korea.
Thank God.
The bad part is that Donald Trump is going to be asked to weigh in on the development of nuclear weapons in North Korea.
The only thing I can hope, and this is a guess, since I've literally tried my hardest to stay away from anything politics, is he's smart enough to know, and he has to be intelligent on some level, or he wouldn't be as rich as he is. For the record,
I was just taking a jab. I wasn't making a political comment.
No, I know. But he should be smart enough to know, hey, maybe this is beyond me. Because I think there's two Donald Trumps, and this is a guess, is maybe there's the public perception. Because the dude has been a public media figure for his almost entire life. He knows how to play the media against themselves. He's not afraid of pissing people off. Maybe that works in his favor in the media. And hopefully, you know, in private, he's like better. I'm hoping, because nobody can be like that in real life, can they?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I think it works for his base, but I think he's pissing off some bipartisan votes. You know what I mean?
So
he's definitely a one-term president. If he makes it to two terms, I would be surprised.
Well, I said the same thing about Obama. But as far as I'm concerned, Donald Trump. And I've said this before, and I still stick by it. The only thing for me is if he feels like he's being talked down to or disrespected by North Korea, I see him acting out. And that's not what I want.
He does.
I want somebody who is cold and calculating. That's it.
I've never met a president who at least seems to get his butt hurt as he does.
Yeah.
And Barack Obama routinely had people call him the N-word, and he never seemed to react. This dude, somebody calls him pokey, and he freaks the hell out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've heard people call him the Cheeto in charge. I mean,
and by the way, out of the two, what Obama was called, in my opinion, is worse.
Oh, yeah. But...
By a long shot.
Yeah.
The shit that I fucking heard about Obama, I mean, really, really made me sad. Man, really, guys? Like, is the argument you want to... And then what's funny is the same people are pissed off that they're calling Trump, you know, like oh, look at his hair. It looks like cotton candy made out of piss.
Well, I had the same comment about when we were doing Real Flix Reviews was... Is you can call me whatever I want, but tell me why. With Trump,
it's... You may call me whatever I want? Well, did you think that through?
You may call me whatever you want. There's plenty of reasons to say, hey, we suck. But they never get a reason. I was fine with people calling Obama whatever they wanted to, minus anything that was a slur. But say why. Why do you think he sucks? Give me some evidence. Give me some information.
Well, so what I was going to say is... Now, George Bush, I didn't think was our greatest president. I don't think he was our worst. And there was a lot of stuff that was pretty bad that they said about him. So when Obama got elected, I said, you know what, there was no passing of an insult at Bush. I'm going to do the same thing to Obama. After his second term, I kind of just was like, I'm over this. Because, like Ryan said, there was some really awful things said about Obama that should have never happened. I mean, I don't think the guy's an idiot. I think he's not as smart as people made him out to be. But
Obama?
Yeah, Obama.
He was an amazing orator.
I just kind of let it go during his second term. I didn't repost any real bad ones unless I thought they were hilarious, which that's basically all I do on Facebook is just repost shit I find funny.
I think for Obama's strength, he's a great public speaker.
Yeah,
he has the ability to move people.
As long as his teleprompter's on.
Yeah. But that by itself is a hard skill, doing it with or without a teleprompter.
Yeah, I couldn't do it with a teleprompter.
I think that was his...
Can we slow this down? A little slower.
Well, you know, look, like, agree or disagree with his policies, he was to me...
Hello?
A good representative of the country. Hello?
Yeah, sorry, you cut out there.
No, it's okay. No, but I was saying he was a good representative of the country. He was,
just
he
like
was,
Jimmy
he
Carter.
Calm, cool, and collected. An amazing orator, like you said, just had that demeanor of like, hey, look, we got it under control. We're looking at both sides of the issues. You know what I mean? He seemed like no matter what he decided, he was actually weighing the choices very heavily, and that's all I can kind of ask for. You know what I mean? Whether I agree with you or disagree with you at the end of the day, I feel like he weighed both sides, equally and gave everything its merits. What happens?
I agree with you to the point I thought he acted like a president should. I thought George Bush acted as a president should for the most part. You know, the guy who seems calm, cool, collected, the whole nine yards. I don't think Trump does it. I don't think he's particularly presidential. I don't think a president should be on Twitter at 4 a.m. calling female news anchors fat pigs or whatever he does. I think that's highly inappropriate for somebody in the office. I really do.
The whole corruption thing, definitely not weighing in on what I think is true or not true or whatever, but I mean, pot in the fucking kettle much? You know what I mean? Like people talk about the media, like, oh, these corrupt bastards, like, are you fucking serious? Like, as opposed to who?
Well,
the government is not, I mean, you know, people, I'm not a conspiracy theorist who thinks that the fucking, there's five, black hands up there fucking ruling the world, but the government is not without its fair share of just retarded, I don't want to say retarded, terrible. I know, right? That was like, oh, I'm going to get bit in the ass for that. You get my point, though. I lost my train of thought.
No, I totally. I just think it's weird. And it's even worse the fact that people are asking celebrities to run even more, because I have a really big issue with celebrities who think their opinions are more important than mine. I would like to think, hey, they're more intelligent. But I've met some celebrities, and I can. Let's just say there was a vacuum.
I can paint a picture of this. I can definitely paint a picture of this. You know, a lot of people blanket the celebrities as they're all dumb Hollywood libtards. Is typically mostly the refrain that I hear. Just because you're a celebrity doesn't mean you're dumb. You know, a lot of celebrities, get paid a lot of money and have some free time to actually look into some things if they want to, just like everybody else. You know what I mean? I don't necessarily think Joe the plumber is any smarter than your average fucking celebrity.
It's more the fact that I think they have a responsibility with the platform they have.
Some of them understand that and are still wrong. People can be wrong from time to time, but the reason that people are kind of leaning towards the celebrity kind of thing, like, oh, we want this person to run the world, we want that person to run the world, or whatever, the country, government, Kid Rock running for fucking Senate, all these kinds of things, is because your average person does not know dick about their local politicians, let alone their state representatives or their federal government representatives. But they do know to a certain extent the persona of The Rock or Kid Rock, or I don't know why I'd use those two examples, but they know these people. Oh, hey, this person... I know this person is on Twitter all the time. We see their Instagram. We know these things about them. they feel, your average person feels like those personalities are already sort of vetted, you know what I mean? Versus the politician always just gives off the slimy fucking vibe and things like that.
I
get where it's coming from.
No, I totally get it. It's a referendum on modern day politics. It's, you know, these guys are slimy.
I think we got our fill with that this time. Like, ooh, maybe we overreached a little bit here, guys.
Yeah, I think the problem is they chose the absolutely wrong. You could have chosen anybody. You could have chosen a half dead poodle, and it would have won the election over Trump. The problem is, it was Hillary Clinton who whether you like,
apparently worse than a half dead poodle.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, really, who came
across as just the most dishonest, like I'll do anything to win this election kind of person ever.
She came across as extremely disingenuous, ingenuous.
Disingenuous.
What he said. I think it'll be interesting. The Kid Rock thing I thought was hilarious because I was hoping he would go for it because I just want to hear the stories because you know that guy's partied more than should be, you know, necessary. There's going to be some sort of story about him, you know, picture of him passed out and a bunch of groupies. Because you know that guy's
partying. And look, I don't necessarily think that should ban somebody outright. I mean, honestly, I believe that you know, the more of our politicians need to maybe live more of an interesting life before they jump into, you know, politics at the age of 9.
Prison guards.
I would be happy if politicians weren't so detached. I've always believed that politicians should live... State politicians especially should live for part of the year within the group they represent. The problem with the politicians is they're so detached. I mean, like John McCain – was it John McCain? No. There was another politician from Alaska who didn't know what email was, thought the internet was a series of tubes.
Palin?
No, this is the same guy that tried to make a bridge to nowhere in Alaska. I have a problem with politicians who at least don't understand modern-day life. That's the main issue I have.
Is the problem, though, the representative government that we've had for a couple hundred years now?
I think the problem
is the problem that we still elect like 9 people to represent a state that, you know, has a lot of people. You know, the disparity amongst, you know, like the representatives and the actual people who they're representing is getting wider and wider every election term.
Electoral college debate?
No, now? No, no. What he's saying is
that's
the fact.
That's my point. I mean, you know, is that just inherently like an issue when we have the ability? You know, back in the day when we had to send a guy on horseback, you know, to go vote for us. Okay, let's not caravan over there. How about we send Dave and he goes and tells them what we want to vote for? You know, so I get that. Dave. I get how it started, but now. Dave was a fucking great guy, and Dave served his purpose, but Dave can retire now.
I think...
Okay,
so
we can all click a button on the internet and save Dave the fucking trip.
See, I'm totally cool with the Electoral College. What I do have issues with, though, is the fact that the number of representatives are capped because they don't have room in the building. I do think we need to adjust the number of people who are representing us because the pool is so big now... That you're not getting, I don't think you're reaching everybody. You know, I also think some states like California need to be split to have better equal representation because in California, the whole state is run by 2 major population centers. So I do think what it is we just don't have a good enough balance between representatives. I really do, because if you go to Los Angeles or San Francisco, the ethos there is completely different than if you go to the Central Valley. I think that's the major issue.
Yeah, that is very true. That is very, very true. It is a way different state when you get out of Los Angeles and San Francisco Bay Area.
And I think that's one of the things. I think if we get better, not better, but more representation, we do something so we fix that. Now, would that mean, you know, building a new Capitol building, doing something? I'm fine in whatever it takes as long as people are getting representation. Or maybe
whatever it takes to get people in a room together who can have an honest discussion about finding some potential middle ground or listening to the other side's point without immediately calling the other people stupid and making everyone defensive.
But they are stupid.
None of this is going to mean a fucking thing ever.
I do.
You know, right now we have to worry about actually being just polite to each other and start from there.
I think two things.
But until we bridge that gap, I mean, you know, whatever opinions we might have on whatever subject aren't going to get anywhere.
See, I think a couple of things. One, I think we need to bring back, what's it called when somebody reads, they try to stop a vote so they just read forever?
Oh, filibuster.
Yeah, like bring back the old school filibuster. Rotate the rules back to the way that was before the Republicans and Democrats changed it. Make it harder to pass rules, to pass laws. Maybe if nothing happens for a while, maybe something will get done because now it's too easy.
No, you're need, on the right track.
On a lot of this stuff, you need less than 50%. Let's have a supermajority for everything for a while, and maybe shit will get done.
Why can't we legalize the gentleman's duel again? I'm good with that.
But look, I'm totally cool with enacting prima nocta. I'm just saying, you know.
No, only
well,
for
actually,
politicians.
I should be a lord of a land first before I enact prima nocta, though.
I mean, I think we need the black powder pistols.
Okay, Aaron
Burr. For gentlemen duels for politicians.
The other thing I think
if we do bring back gentlemen's duels, it needs to be black powder pistols, muzzle loaded only.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just saying, you know, we're like it's the one form of gun control I'm outright totally cool for. Gentlemen's duels require black powder.
And a white glove to smack the other one.
And a what?
A white glove.
To smack the other one.
Opposite of yours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if they need to be elbow long. Or is that shoulder?
The shoulder.
Okay.
Something needs to be get done. I'm fine with electoral college. I just don't think we have enough representation because I don't know if I necessarily agree with a popular vote either.
You can't say that you're for the electoral college and say that we don't have equal representation. I mean that doesn't work.
Well, yeah, because everything has checks and balances. I think that's
obviously
one of the checks and balances.
Obviously not if you think that we're not getting equal representation, which I'm saying.
Say we're equal representation. I'm saying we don't get enough representation.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. You said that you're okay with Electoral College, but we don't have
99% of the time the Electoral College goes the way of the popular vote. What I am saying is the fact that, you know, per million person people, there may be half a person who are actually their representation. There's like 6 or 9 congressmen that are California, triple the number. I think that's the issue. Is we don't have, I don't think we have enough people representing. I think the pool is getting so large per person that there's just not equal representation for anybody.
Is it 10 or 11? Hold on.
I think that's the major
issue. Yeah, well, here's my, recommendation for the three fucking people that are going to listen to this.
Being generous.
I'm going to go with identity politics here, which I fucking hate. I'm sorry if I'm labeling you. If you consider yourself a Republican or a conservative, go find a liberal and give them a hug. If you consider yourself a liberal or a Democrat, go find yourself a conservative brother and hug that motherfucker tight.
As long as the person is not a
hippie. That's where this all has to start.
You can't wear patchouli oil or I'll slap you.
Yeah, I don't want that getting on
my
clothes.
No, no, no. Definitely take a shower. Take a shower first, you know.
Thank
you. Some Dove, some Irish Spring, something.
Bleach,
and just go and we need to start improving some relations around here. This shit is getting annoying.
It's definitely fascinating. It's definitely fascinating. Like I think after the Bush Gore thing, it ramped up more than I've ever seen. So it's definitely getting fascinating. The fact that now the right and the left are perpetual. You know.
Yeah, it's Al Gore's fault.
See what
I mean? What it really comes down to is that Martin Luther King was right, Malcolm X was wrong. Okay, it is not by any means necessary. That's not how shit gets done. What happens with any means necessary is that people feel that they can justify the means by the ends, and lying is okay, and cheating and backstabbing, as long as you get your sort of moral victory at the end. But it doesn't fucking mean anything because nobody ever spikes the football in this game. You know what I mean? It's always going to be running to the end zone that never shows up. Now, I'm mixing metaphors here, but it's still... Yeah, a little.
I know. I agree. I think I think it comes down to one thing and one thing only. Agree to disagree. Give somebody a handshake and move on.
And talk to the person. Find out why you disagree, and find that there may be a different perspective on an issue that you hadn't thought about. You know what I mean? And go from there. But lying and cheating just to get what you want is not, because then the other side can do it to you, and then you guys bitch and turnabout is fair play, as they say.
I do think it has to start with one thing, and just before everything else is, you realize
medicinal meth.
You're Americans. If we have a foundation of the fact we're all Americans, I think everything's going to move on. The problem is identity politics is so strong. Instead of being an American, you're this group, you're that group, and that group. Hey, guess what? All your fucking motherfucking groups are Americans. That's the key there. If you're fucking voting, you technically should be an American. How about realize that, move on, grow some balls,
and that used to be the rallying cry, of everybody back in the day. But then, you start getting, albeit probably small group of people with a really loud voice, yelling like, no, these people need to be out of our country, and no, this is, we want to keep it just for us, and all these things, and they start with these tribalism. Sort of this, non-inclusion kind of tactics,
I do got to say, one of my favorite things of coming up with the last 5 years is the extreme left calling for death for the conservatives. That part makes me laugh because they'll still say they're anti-gun.
And biggest hypocritical bullshit I've ever heard.
Because my part, if you're anti-gun call for death, I mean, that doesn't really balance out.
Well, they actually had the liberal firearm training camps. You didn't know that? Go look that shit up. That shit's hilarious.
I think that's hilarious.
Oh, yeah. They actually were saying that when they were doing the whole death to the conservatives thing, they actually had a bunch of liberals that they were like, okay, well, this is how we have to train to learn how to do this. And they were teaching them survival training and firearms. Now, remember, I didn't say firearm safety, firearms.
Were they wearing Che Guevara shirts?
I could barely... Fucking idiots. I could just... It was just, I only watched parts of it because I was like, this has got to be a joke.
I find, everybody's full of hypocrisy. I know most of mine, and you got to laugh at it. But the fact that you're calling violence on a group of individuals who own most of the firearms in the United States is hilarious, because it's not going to go well. And every cop I've ever talked to said, you want me to do what?
No.
Literally, every cop I've talked to has said, they can fuck off.
Yeah.
And that's a quote, by the way.
Yeah.
So, ladies and gentlemen, for Jonathan Charney, James Stevens, and Ryan Preston, as always, thank you for listening.
Goodbye.